And our next case for argument, United States v. Bach, Mr. Fleming.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Larry Fleming. I'm an assistant federal public defender from Southern Illinois, and I'm representing Casey Bach. First of all, I would like to note that in this particular appeal, I recognize the fact that I am somewhat swimming upstream, particularly in view of this court's decisions in Skidmore and the recent opinion last month in United States versus Mitchell. I also understand that what I might be doing here is simply stopping at a weigh station on the way to the Supreme Court, but it's the only way to get there.
Why you think it is in your client's interest or in the interest of other criminal defendants to get Almendarez-Torres overturned? I mean, usually criminal defense lawyers try very hard to keep their clients' priors out of evidence. And if Almendarez-Torres is overturned and the priors become elements of the offense, the prosecutor will have a full hand to show every prior offense, every prior felony the defendant has committed, to tell the jury what it was, to explain to them how serious it was, and so on. I wouldn't think defendants
Your Honor,
would be better off as a result.
Well, I believe that could be handled the same way we handle cases involving felon in possession, and that is under the old chief case, we can simply submit a stipulation to the jury that the defendant has, in fact,
But as you remember from Justice Souter's opinion in Old Chief, he said stipulation can't remove from the jury the prosecutor's ability to present the jury with the full story of all the elements. It can't be too streamlined. So I think the position you're taking here and what other criminal defense counsel have taken would be a very bad move for criminal defendants. And maybe you think your fiduciary duties to Mr. Bach requires you to do this, but...
That's exactly what I feel, Your Honor. I mean, I have to take the cases one at a time, and I don't have the luxury that the U.S. attorney
has. The felony in possession, the nature of the felony is irrelevant. The details are irrelevant.
Right.
But if the question is whether to increase a person's sentence because of prior criminal activity, you have to know what that criminal activity was. You can't just say this person had three felonies.
I think you can stipulate that the nature of the felonies is consistent with the statute, and that would be either a...
Yeah, you're going to run into Justice Souter's reservation that the prosecutor can put in enough to tell the jury the whole story, and if you think the whole story includes the priors...
I can only tell you that you have to assume the good faith of the prosecutor. Yes, I do, and I have never run into a problem under Old Chief. In every case, the prosecutor has agreed to the stipulation, and I have agreed to the stipulation, and we've gone to trial on that issue. I mean, with that stipulation in front of the jury. Since Old Chief, I've never had a case where the prosecutor insisted on proving his prior conviction in detail. Your Honor, I would, however, like to talk about the crux of what I hope this court will do. As I say, I guess this is going to happen.
Let's just say you practice in a small and apparently harmonious district. The Old Chief problem has been highly contentious in other districts.
Okay. I practice in actually two, Eastern District of Missouri and Southern District of Illinois, and we've never had a problem. So in any event, whether we have a problem or not, I'm representing Casey Bach. I have to look at this case with blinders. I don't have the luxury of seeing the great issues that might arise in the future. I would like, however, to say what I think the distinction is here between what the courts have done in Almendarez-Torres and the other cases, Skidmore, and this court has done in Skidmore and Mitchell. I think what the courts have done is fail to focus on the right to a grand jury presentment as a separate right. Other than a defendant has right to notice, of course, he has a right to jury trial, of course, but a separate and distinct right under the Constitution is the right to have a grand jury as an independent body look at this case and exercise the ultimate in prosecutorial discretion and say whether he should be indicted.
There's a lot of unreality to it because the grand jury proceeding is ex parte. It's really an investigative device, not a screen.
Well, that
prosecutor's favorite line is a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich if asked to.
But there are statistics showing that there's about 5 to 8% of cases where the grand jury doesn't go along with the prosecutor's recommendation. And as a matter of fact,
how many of those is the recommendation repackaged?
I don't know. But the fact is, the concept embodied in our Constitution, and in fact, what we tell grand jurors when we hand out this, what I have submitted as additional authority, the handbook for federal grand juries, prepared by the Administrative Office of the Court, tells them that the history of the grand jury is such that a grand jury can refuse to return an indictment, even if the government wants the indictment returned. It cites the Earl of Shaftesbury case. But
That's certainly right. Then the government will go present the same case to another grand jury.
Well, they certainly can, and maybe they can, and I guess a prosecutor can go to a different...
But in any event, counsel, I'm not sure where you're going. The dissent in Almendarez-Torres was not based on the indictment clause, nor was Apprendi based on the indictment clause, because Apprendi is a state case, and the indictment clause doesn't even apply to the
That's
case.
Correct. All of those
Both
cases...
Both the dissent in Almendarez-Torres and the majority in Apprendi are based on the due process clause.
All of those cases are based on the right to a jury trial, and that's exactly what I'm saying. The courts simply haven't addressed the issue of whether an individual is entitled to a grand jury as the ultimate decider, the ultimate applier of prosecutorial discretion. And I can tell you that I have had cases where I took the risk of going to the grand jury, having my client testify before the grand jury, and the grand jury refused to indict even though the evidence was there. Now, a grand jury, as I cited in the reply brief, Moore's federal practice, a grand jury has the right to refuse to indict, even if the evidence is there. They reflect the conscience of the community. And if the conscience of the community says, look, the evidence may be there, but this is too hard on this guy, they have a right to refuse to indict or indict for a lesser offense. That's the way the Constitution was set up. That's how we inherited it from England. And that's the right that I'm trying to assert here. It's separate from the right to a jury trial. It's separate from the right to notice. It's a right to have a cross-section of the community review the situation and see if prosecution should proceed. In this particular case, we have Casey Bach, who 15 years before had been convicted of three burglaries, which qualify under the statute. The police are at his house looking for drugs that his brother, in fact, was selling. They're executing a search warrant, and they say to Casey, have you got any weapons in the house? And he says, yeah, I've got a .22 on the shelf of my dresser or china cabinet. I've got a .22 up there. They seize a .22, and now he's looking at 15 years. I mean, he wasn't using the weapon, which, of course, is not exactly a drug weapon anyway, a .22. He wasn't using a weapon. He was in his own house. Now, were the elements there? Probably so. But I think my position is he should have had a right to have this reviewed by this cross-section of the community, say, do we really want to call this armed career criminal? Do we really want to send this guy to prison for 15 years? That's what the framers said. That may not be how it is practiced, but
does
that's
England,
what...
Does England use grand juries?
I think they did back in those days.
Yeah,
they had the grand assize, I think is what they call
They've
it.
They've abandoned it quite a
little bit. Justice Learned Hand talked about that in the In re Kittle case to some extent. I think Judge Bauer of this court talked about it a little bit in the Zella case. But, yeah, they did. And we inherited a system from them. And at least the core concept of that system, and we may have gotten away from it, is that the prosecutor over here has discretion. He can decide whether to prosecute or not prosecute. He can prosecute if there's evidence there. But he can also not prosecute if there's evidence there, which they do all the time. And our framers, our forefathers said, okay, we're not going to give this entirely to the prosecutor. In federal cases, part of our federal constitution is that we're going to have this group of people that exercises discretion. They can decide to prosecute or not prosecute. And that is a constitutional right. And it's a right different from all the rights addressed in the Supreme Court cases, including Almirandez-Torres and the other cases cited in our brief. And that right, the rights addressed there is the right to a jury trial. Well, of course you can, if you've admitted the facts, as happened in Almirandez-Torres, the right to have them determined beyond a reasonable doubt by a jury kind of falls by the wayside. But the upfront right to have a group of people look at this case and say, should this person be prosecuted, is not waived by that. It's a right that is in the Constitution that our forefathers intended, and whether it is still in existence or not, it's there. Whether in the exercise or in the practice of grand juries, it's honored or not honored, it's there.
Well, let me ask you, what in your view makes the priors an element of the offense? Right, the grand jury presumably considers all the elements of the offense.
Yes.
But after Harris, at the end of the Supreme Court's term last year, isn't it a little hard to conceive of the priors as elements of the offense?
Well, I think Justice Thomas in Apprendi stated very, very clearly that...
Not Justice Thomas was in dissent in Harris.
Yes.
And we try as best we can, not always successfully, to implement the majority opinion.
We have, in Harris... We'll see how the Supreme Court stacks up here, but I think the numbers are with us now for an overruling of Almendarez-Torres. Justice Thomas...
It is entirely possible that Almendarez-Torres will be overruled on due process grounds. The question I was asking is, given Harris, what chance do you think there is that it could be overruled on indictment clause grounds?
I think there is a good chance that the court will go along with what Justice Thomas said in Apprendi, and that is any fact which increases the sentence to which a person may be subjected
is an
element of the offense.
That is the position expressly rejected by a majority of the Supreme Court in Harris after Apprendi, but with the approval of at least one member of the Apprendi majority, Justice Scalia, leaving Justice Thomas in dissent. Unless they overrule Harris, I don't understand where we are going on this indictment clause business.
Well, I guess
you're
going to
have pretty cumbersome indictments, aren't you?
Pardon?
You're going to have pretty cumbersome indictments.
We do already.
Well, they don't include the person's criminal record, though.
In the Eastern District of Missouri, they spell out what the three priors are that are the predicates for the armed career criminal charge. I think it's more than just an element or not element issue. It's a question of whether a person has been afforded their right to grand jury review and the grand jury deciding whether this case warrants prosecution. Casey Bach does not deserve to spend 15 years in prison for having a 22 in the cabinet in his own house. A grand jury could well decide that. And
okay. Thank you, Mr. Fleming.
Thank you.
Expired. Mr. Wilson?
May it please the Court, Robert Wilson, representing the United States of America. I go back to the question regarding the problem with prior convictions and what they are. Let's not forget that the Armed Career Criminal Statute mandates that they are three prior violent felonies, and that's an element of that. It's not just a regular felony, it's a violent felony. And I think it's a good point that there may be some old chief issues that you may not be able to get around. This case is controlled by Skidmore. It's been attempted to be distinguished through a presentment clause argument, but in Skidmore, the court did discuss presentment, and it says presentment or indictment, and the court said presentment, and the court even used that language, whether it was presented to a grand jury. Is that okay? And the court said yes, it was, and there hasn't been any other opinions anywhere that place the burden of prior recidivism onto an indictment stage, and as a matter of fact, to a proof beyond a reasonable doubt. All the cases that have been cited as allegedly undermining Almendarez-Torres are things that happen with the crime, and I'd like to point out that even Harris is something that happens sort of with the crime. And I don't think that applies because we're dealing with a minimum issue rather than an enhanced penalty issue. And the case law in this district is still true that Lowe controls, clearly stating that 924E there's no elements of the offense. It's a sentence enhancement provision, and that's what it is. So there would be no cases that would, or nothing to suggest that it would need to be pled in an indictment. And unless the court has any further questions,
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel, and thanks to the defender's office for representing.